Okay, so I want you to imagine this. The night before a big game, you hear rumors of teammates wanting to go out and party. But instead of panicking, your leaders calmly intervene. They confront the players, not to punish, but to remind them of the team's standards. The next day on the field, a teammate slumps, right? Their shoulders go down. Their body language is really poor. Instead of silence, though, a teammate steps up, challenges their teammate to raise their standard, to remember the team is counting on them. Then later after the game in the locker room, a few players start blaming teammates and coaches for the loss. Instead of joining in or ignoring them, a few teammates challenge them and remind them, hey, that's not how we do things here. That's not how we talk here. Then the next day in the weight room, the coach doesn't even need to be present because he knows and trusts, even in this low point of the season, that the leaders are going to drive the standard. They're going to make sure everyone's focused and still working hard. This, my friends, is player accountability. When teammates support and challenge each other and are able to call each other up in difficult moments. And these are actual real examples from coaches that I coach that they shared them with me just last week when I asked for, hey, how are your players holding each other accountable this season? But let's be honest, this doesn't magically happen. It takes hard work and a lot of intentionality. Why? Because holding others accountable, it's really, really hard. It's uncomfortable, potentially creates conflict. And let's face it, who wants to be the bad guy on the team? Who wants to be the accountability police? Well, join us today as we dive into the complexities of player accountability. We're going to explore the obstacles, right, that are holding your players back from doing it more. And we're going to unlock practical strategies to cultivate it within your team. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick. In addition to this podcast, I'm a leadership coach and culture consultant. To learn more about how my business, TOC, can support you and your team, visit tocculture.com. And you can learn more about Betsy at betsybutterick.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the TOC newsletter. Every Thursday, you'll receive a short article. And you'll also receive the notes to each episode of the podcast, as well as our top 10 podcast episodes and my top 10 articles. Subscribe using the link in the description of this episode, or simply go over to tocculture.com and click on newsletter in the header.
Today, we have very bravely decided to tackle the challenging topic of accountability, a topic that impacts all teams and that most teams agree is very important for team success. And yet most coaches would agree this is a big challenge for a lot of today's athletes. So to start, JP, Nate, I would love to know, what are you seeing, what are you hearing when it comes to the struggle of accountability within the programs that you work with or the teams that you coach?
I mean, I think I've used this phrase and I've heard many, many coaches use it before, which is, we just don't have any players that want to hold each other accountable. I mean, it's a very, very common phrase. And I think there's a lot of different reasons we feel that way. I think for one, I know I myself as a coach got tired of feeling like the accountability police. Like, does nobody care about the standards on this team? Am I the only one that has to say something or do something? And so that can be really frustrated. I think some coaches are not good at accountability and they honestly want their players to pick up the slack for their own sometimes ineffectiveness at, you know, disciplining and holding the standard in their program. I think there's the other truth, which is we can't police everything. And at the end of the day, in our program, there are things that are going to happen in the locker room. There's going to be things that are going to happen off the field, off the court, and that we can't be around for all of that. And we recognize that at the end of the day, a player-led program, a program that's a little more player-led than just, you know, all the way on the coach-led spectrum there, that's going to serve us well, that they're going to feel like, hey, they have more ownership of the standards. It's not just the coach's standards. It's their standards. They're driving it. We know that that's going to lead to a better team performance. So I think there's multiple reasons that we want to be better at this. And we're also very frustrated by the current state of accountability in our program.
Yeah, and you've just mentioned so many fears or reasons, I'll say, that coaches mention when they talk about the challenge of accountability. Nate, would you speak to some of the conversations that you've had with your team when this topic of accountability comes up? What do you understand from the player's perspective is getting in the way of them feeling like they can do this well?
Yeah, well, I think I'd agree with JP, in the sense that this is a huge frustration for coaches. And whether they use the word accountability or they talk about a lack of leadership in their program or they talk about not having seniors that are willing to do X, Y, or Z, correct their teammates or help them reach the standard, whatever it might be, it's maybe one of the most common things that we hear, And I think in just addition to one of the things that he said is that players don't know how to do it. I mean, if you put this expectation on your players, and I had this conversation with my team over the weekend here, just kind of getting ready for our discussion today, and asked them what does accountability look like to us? It was a hard word for them to understand because we don't use it very often. And so when they started to describe, I asked them what happens when a player is complaining in the locker room or if somebody's frustrated with their role, thinking, well, somebody's going to have to, put their foot down and enforce the standard here that we don't do those things around here. Their vantage point or their perspective on it was, well, we just try to figure out how to help that person more so than trying to correct or to fix them. And I thought that was a really interesting way to look at it. When you start thinking about when coaches say the word accountability, I think ultimately they're trying to find help, as JP said, in getting, the players to reach a standard. But when players start to hear that word, at least for us, I'm not sure that they really connect with it, but they do connect with the idea that maybe we have a struggling teammate here that needs some support. And at the end of the day, that may accomplish the same thing as what we're talking about with coaches.
Yeah, and to your point, Nate, we hear a lot from coaches, my players aren't willing to hold each other accountable, or my players are afraid to hold each other accountable. And I think you hit on a key point there of what's really at stake here is less willingness or fear, and more there's a lack of skill around how to do accountability in a way that feels like support instead of feeling very critical or very personal. You also mentioned something, and I want to come back to the skill part in a minute. You also mentioned something, Nate, about, sometimes it's, well, our seniors aren't willing to take that leadership role. There's a lot that plays into accountability. One of those factors for many people is credibility. Well, I'm only a freshman, or well, I'm an assistant coach, or well, I haven't yet earned the right or ability, the credibility specifically to hold my teammates accountable. What is that about? Where does that credibility come from? What does it look like? How can someone, regardless of age or position, go about earning the right to speak to the standards or to hold their teammate accountable to something the team has deemed important?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. That came up in our conversation with our players as well. And it wasn't so much about I've earned it because I've been here the longest, as sometimes we think about seniors. The thing that they said was, look, I'm not going to follow or listen to somebody that's not doing that thing that they're asking me to do. So don't get up in my face about getting back on defense when you're still at the other end of the court and not back either. Don't get up in my face about complaining about the coaching staff when every time I turn around, I hear you being critical of, one of the coaches. So I think that there's obviously a hypocrisy there that certainly undermines one's ability to correct others or confront others or, even to encourage others. And if there's one place that coaches can start with their players, I think it's that. Are the players modeling what the standard should look like? Are you calling your teammates to a place that you already are? That gets rid of some of those built-in excuses for players that say, oh, yeah, right, I'm not going to follow her because she doesn't do it either.
Yeah, and I think, Nate, you hit it on the head there perfectly, but I would also add that players feel they need to have a level of status within their team. I think the misconception is around their ability. They feel like they need to be a starter or the star to be able to challenge others. And while that may help at certain points, we definitely know, and especially in one of my favorite books, The Captain's Class by Sam Walker, there's plenty of great leaders that actually weren't the best player on the team, but were able to influence in the right way. I do think, though, when we know what we know about the research around culture and team dynamics is that there is a little bit of status management at play that's going to give people the safety to feel like they can speak up. And then also people will listen. I know there's plenty of examples where coaches have had players that demonstrate all the right behaviors, but you know, they're a little bit on the outside of the group. They're a bit awkward. They don't seem to have that same necessary level of respect or influence that other players whom the coach wished didn't have influence on the team do have, you know? And so I think that's one of the great challenges oftentimes in team dynamics is oftentimes maybe our best, hardest worker, the player that seems to demonstrate all the standards we want, isn't actually the most influential player in the team. And that can definitely create some obstacles and some barriers that have to be worked around.
And you mentioned status, JP, and credibility and leadership. Let's look at coaches, because what I hear from student athletes sometimes is, well, I mean, yeah, we talk about accountability as part of our culture, but so-and-so coach never holds so-and-so player accountable, either because they're the best or they're worried about how they're going to react. Talk about coaches. What can coaches do to foster greater accountability in their programs?
I mean, I think that's a great one is, first off, are we giving passes to certain players because we need them to win games? And are we consistently holding players to a standard? Now, one thing that I see come up a lot with the coaches I work with who are probably above average at this because we work really hard at doing this the right way, but it still comes up, is perception, right? Sometimes there's players that are being held accountable for certain things, but it's not always, you know, shared amongst the team. And how transparent our coaches around this is potentially up for debate, but we try to encourage our coaches to really have more of an open policy around, hey, what's going on here around a player was late, a player did this during a game and there was a big blow up. Like, this is how we're addressing it because we're here, you know, we're a family here, we're going to talk about these things. And I was really inspired, I know, by a previous guest we've had on the podcast, Eric Lang, a coach of American International hockey team. Just amazing story there of what he's done. And they just have like, hey, we're a team. We're going to talk about this with everybody here because we want that transparency. So I think sometimes the transparency thing comes across as a bit of an issue. But I also think coaches obviously have a different role around what their responsibility is to hold players accountable, right? It's the coach's responsibility to discipline when it comes to accountability, whereas the teammates don't necessarily need to be disciplining or sitting players out from games. So those, what it looks like is different, but I still think there's a lot that we can demonstrate for our athletes around what accountability could look like when it comes to being a little more curious, using a little more questions, less harsh of a tone, the right body language. How do we want our players to hold each other accountable? Are we setting that example on the sideline and in practice? And I think that's an area that coaches probably need to focus a little bit more on that they maybe kind of ignore.
And you hear that from players where they say, okay, we talked about credibility before. When it crosses the line, or it feels like it crosses the line where you, my teammate, are now coaching me or telling me what to do or disciplining me in a way that I feel should explicitly come only from my coach, how do we help today's athletes learn how to have these conversations in a way that feels supportive instead of critical? Is there anything that we can do, let's say, in our sporting environment or perhaps off the court or field to allow them to become more skillful or practice? Like, what skills does that involve and where might that conversation start?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about in our program for our ascending leaders, you know, either players that are on the track to become captains or juniors that are going to become seniors in a year, is that their influence is magnified by their relationships, the individual relationships that they have with their teammates. And we talk a lot about, especially with our sophomores and juniors, that now that you kind of know what's going on around here, now is the time to really invest in demonstrating care for as many teammates as you can over the next year or so, so that if we are in a place where, you know, at some point you need to take the lead on something or you need to share information with somebody, you know, hold them accountable, so to speak, they know that you're doing it for their best interest, that you care about them, that this isn't a personal affront necessarily. And also there are skills, you know, involved in that. And we talk about, and this came up with our conversation with our team over the weekend, about even the little things about the language that we use, such as instead of saying, Betsy, you struggle with this, saying we have a struggle with this, or this is a struggle for us, you know, and sort of talking about it in a way where, again, we're trying to move towards a solution. Even how players, you know, they mentioned in our talk that getting in my face versus standing next to me with an arm around me, you know, and sharing information. And that's a word that came up a couple of times, was that this isn't a personal attack. This isn't something that excommunicates you from the group because you're not doing it or you're not good enough to be, you know, part of this team, whatever it might be. It's we're coming alongside each other to try to get to the same place. And even how you approach that from a body language perspective as a coach and as a player can communicate that before the words even come out of your mouth.
Yeah, another thing I really love doing with teams is just talking about that fear of, well, if I challenge her or I challenge him, I challenge my teammate, you know, what that response is going to be, and the fear of losing that relationship. But sometimes one of my questions is, well, what evidence do you have that they won't take that well? And so oftentimes, like, they recognize that their fear is not legitimate, right? Like, that the times that where we have challenged or stepped in there and given each other feedback, that it's actually, you know, been well received, you know, in a lot of teams settings. So in some teams, they've obviously had some negative times, but they've been able to come back from that, I think, as well, too, is recognizing, hey, we say we're a close team, we say we're connected, we say we're family. Well, what do families do? Sometimes things do get a little bit chippy. Sometimes we do challenge and they get a little heated. But if we're a family, we know we can come back from that. And so I think that's one big encouragement is I always challenge a team with in a lot of my facilitation is like, okay, we say that we're connected, but are we really? You know, are we willing to have these hard conversations? And so I think this is something I pointed out in my book, The Culture System, where it's like, I think it's very popular for teams to set out goals and a vision for the season and, you know, their values and their standards. But I think we stop there and we have to keep going. We have to say, okay, well, what happens when we don't meet the standards, right? How can we as teammates support and hold each other accountable? And then how can our coaches support and hold us accountable? And we often call that the support and accountability agreement. It's just we're agreeing. And what we're doing is we're giving each other permission to challenge each other here in this environment. We want to be challenged. We all agree to these standards. And now this is some ways in which we are inviting feedback from our peers and from our coaches.
And JP, you mentioned family. You know, we're a team, we're a family, and that word is used a lot, especially in sports, especially in cultures. And one thing that came to mind for me while you were talking is, you know, in some of the better advice I've read about parenting, and when we worry about damaging the relationship, much as many athletes worry about damaging a relationship with their teammate or their peer, a piece of advice that was given to me is it's not the disruption of the relationship that's an issue. You have to be able to discipline, to hold boundaries, to have hard conversations. It's the relational repair that does or doesn't happen afterwards, after the hard moment, that's the difference between that child feeling secure in their attachment to their parent or feeling insecure or distance from their parent. Same thing. It's like, it's not the disruption. Miscommunication, misunderstanding, that's an organic, natural part of people coexisting in an ecosystem. It's what do we do afterwards? And how do we ensure that the relationship is cohesive and that we stay connected following moments of disconnect? And when you were talking, Nate, you said, you know, how you do it. And I love the visual examples you gave about body language. I think about a portion of the workshop that I do around communication with teams is given three choices, you, I, and we. The fastest way to put someone on defensive is to start with you. Because as biological beings, we are primed to protect ourselves. And even if it's positive, for a split second, someone doesn't know yet what comes after the you. And so there's a momentary stepping back and a defensiveness. I take the same sentence and we'll go basketball example. So if I said to Nate, maybe at halftime, I'm a coach and you're an athlete, and I say, you need to rebound more aggressively. I'll ask, how does that feel? And that player usually says, like, well, like, it's my fault. Nobody else is, you know, responsible for the fact that I'm not rebounding. I'll then say, I need you to rebound more aggressively. And I'll ask the person what changed. Usually they say, well, Now it feels like you're in it with me, or it's a little more inclusive. It doesn't feel as harsh. If we look at the language, I need you, the you is still in there. I've simply made a request beforehand, which in the context of a team or a family, requests are often things that are well-received or supported. And then a layer above that would be, we need to rebound more aggressively, where Nate, I'm looking at you and I'm saying we, but you know, and I know that we're talking about your need to rebound more aggressively. And maybe as we leave the locker room on the way out, I might say something supportive like, hey, I know they're tough to box out. You got this. So how we do it absolutely matters. Less what we say, how we say it, picking our timing, being able to call people up versus simply calling them out. Talk to us more about skills. What other skills do you either teach athletes or coaches, or have you heard that you feel are valuable if we're going to be intentional about helping our athletes get better at this thing called accountability?
Yeah, I'll offer up a few here. One thing that I've really enjoyed that I learned from your ACT videos, Betsy, is the correct and then connect. You know, I've always learned, you know, connect before you correct. But I love how you in the videos talked about when we correct, we need to connect it back to the standards, right? To who they want to be, you know, how they want to show up and what we've agreed to. And I think that's just so critical. I mean, this is where, you know, we've worked a lot with teams and athletes over the years in really trying to in those moments, reference the standard. And there's a great story in Owen Eastwood's book, Belonging, where he talks about the South African rugby team. And they actually sat down and created this template for how to give each other hard feedback, you know, in those one-on-ones. Okay, you have to have a one-on-one with a player to say they're below the standard. How do you do that? And one of the most powerful things I think that they have in that template is just a reference back to the standard. Hey, man, I think I saw this out there today, you know, that's below the standard that we've set for ourselves, you know, and just pointing back the standard is so, so important. So I think the more that we can do that as coaches, first off, and then the more we can help our athletes to say, hey, that's, we need you to rebound more. We need you to show up on time more. Remember, that's below our standard. I think that that helps a lot. I think other ways that we can encourage that type of accountability is simply by creating spaces and opportunities for our players in practices to do that. And so what does that actually look like? Well, that means when there's a moment where the team's effort's really, really poor, you might pull your captain or a couple captains aside and say, hey, here's a moment where you need to pull the team together, or here's a moment where you need to pull one or two individuals together. And I need you to have a word with them. This is a moment for you to step in and kind of, you know, remember, go back to that template that we came up with, or how we talked about this. So this is something you would have prior to that practice worked with your team on, but now in the practice, you can pull them aside and say, hey, here's this moment, right? Before I step in and hold them accountable, how about you give this a go? And so we're actually allowing them to get reps at these moments of accountability or difficult conversations.
Yeah, I think that's great, JP. And, you know, we would just add little things to that in terms of just, you know, how do we communicate and deliver information that might help a teammate perform better in the next moment or practice better, whatever it might be. And I know I've shared this on the podcast before, but we use this analogy of just throwing a catchable pass. You know, you might have a fastball and you might not be really thinking about it, and you're just delivering a heater, you know, right to somebody's hands, and they can't handle it because it's too hot. There's too much velocity. And sometimes that's relevant to communication where, you know, in the moment we just bark because we want something to change, whether that's coaches or players, but we have to be mindful of who's catching the pass. And I think how we deliver that, whether it's our body language or our kids talk a lot about tone of voice, that they're in the same way that, you know, you can be a repulsive word, you know, right at the beginning of a phrase, just the tone of voice can all of a sudden put someone on the defensive or can invite somebody in, you know, to the information that's going to be shared. And I think the other thing that we try to just create awareness for our team is, do we have a responsibility to share information that might help a teammate or might help us collectively to be able to perform better in the next possession or after the timeout or after the dead ball, you know, or in a practice, for example? And if we do, then aren't we being a little bit selfish by holding on to that if we're not willing to share it or we're not willing to take a chance to deliver that information that doesn't help us get where we want to go either. And so I think, you know, normalizing that this is an important part of what a successful team looks like, and we're going to need each other to reach the standards that we've set. But then again, walking through the ways that we can deliver those messages so that they can be received and we can all move forward together.
All right, just a quick timeout in today's conversation. If you want to develop a culture where athletes feel safe and empowered to hold each other accountable, to support and challenge, you've got to address your culture systematically. The TOC Transformational Coaching and Culture Certification is going to help you as a leader to develop this type of culture system. This self-paced online training is offered at 3 different levels of certification, so you can pick an appropriate training for you, your staff, your club, your athletic department, or sports association, whatever level you're at. To learn more and purchase for yourself, your staff, your club, or association, go on over to tocculture.com and click on certification.
I'm listening to you right now, Nate. Everything you're saying, I'm putting myself in the position of an athlete in your program. And everything you just talked about, I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. Like, that sounds good. Like, that sounds like a positive thing. And so my question becomes, you know, why wouldn't that be something that everyone jumps on board? And I think the reasons we've already articulated of what can get in the way, whether those fears are, as you mentioned, JP, simply imagined, or if they're real. And I know many people have not necessarily had a positive experience either trying to hold someone accountable or being held accountable themselves. These are the realities that we have to work with. You mentioned a word there, Nate, that I want to come back to in a minute. But to kick off, I'll tell a brief story. In some of the work that I do with teams around accountability, I'll write the word accountability on the board, and then I'll split it after accounts. We've got account and ability. And I'll say, here's something I want to invite you into. When we think about accountability, we most often focus on this first word, account. And then I'll ask the room, I'll say, if you were going to open a bank account and you went to the bank, you showed the teller your ID, what's a question they might ask you? What inevitably comes up from the audience is, well, do you want a checking account or a savings account? So I'll write those two words, checking, savings. I say, right, so this is how most people approach accountability. We're either continually checking up on someone to make sure that they are doing or have done what they said they're going to do, and or we are saving up our small disappointments of all the times they haven't met that standard or that mark, to the point that eventually sometimes we need to close the account. So what if instead of holding people to account, we focus on that second part of the word, ability? How do we hold each other able? And then I go through a series of questions that I recommend. What needs to be done? Is there a due date or timeline or deadline by which it needs to be done? What's your plan to make it happen? What could get in the way? How are you going to navigate those barriers when they inevitably come up? And what does support look like for you or specifically from me? So in doing so and asking these questions, how do we enable or increase the felt ability of someone to do that thing which only they can do? There's different ways to think about accountability. And you mentioned a certain word, responsibility. And I think there's a lot of possibility there. If we consider for a moment, even through a communication lens, that perhaps the issue is not solely our skills around accountability or a desire to have that experience, what if the language itself is a barrier? If we didn't call it accountability, what other words might get us more of that felt experience that you were just speaking to, Nate?
Yeah, Betsy, I love your challenge here for us as coaches in this. I think that's a great way to kind of start to reframe this. And it's got me already thinking, even just, you know, a lot of times with the coaches I work with and their team manifestos, they might have that, you know, accountability agreement. But now I'm looking at it, it's like more as like, what's my responsibility in all of this? And the self-responsibility, my responsibility to my teammates, my coach's responsibility to work with me. And I think there's really, it's important to recognize we have a responsibility for our choices, our decisions, how we show up. And then we have a responsibility to our teammates in that regard. And I think that difference between the two and the four, I learned from Dr. Jane Nelson and her work around positive discipline. As parents, we have a responsibility to our children, not for our children. It's important to draw that distinction. And I think just even framing that language, so what's our responsibility to our teammates when they are below the standard, when they're not meeting those standards, when they're doing things that we agreed that we wouldn't tolerate in this program anymore? And so when we have that clear standard, but then we also have this clear what our responsibility to is, our responsibility is to talk to them about it, to share, to pull them aside, right? Like we can start to really clearly define what that level of responsibility is going to look like. And then we can have a conversation too around how, what's our coach's responsibility, right? And our coach's responsibility as a coach is when the team's below the standard in practice is to do something, to say something, to coach us, to challenge us, right? And yet so oftentimes players get, you know, they have this adverse response to a coach challenging them in those moments. So it's just really a powerful way to frame it, I think, is just to change that language. And I think it can really help to gain permissions, but also shift the mindset in a really powerful way.
And I think for us, Betsy, the word that really has resonated most with our team over the years is just service. You know, when I ask questions with our team this weekend about what do we do if somebody's complaining in the locker room or someone's frustrated with their role, as I mentioned, their responses were much more about supporting that person in service of the standards that we've agreed to, and really in service of trying to help that person to be able to sort through their issues, to find a resolution so that they can move forward. You know, when we use the word service or servant leadership or whatever, you know, the phrasing is, that sounds like a much more noble pursuit than holding someone accountable, you know, or even sometimes, you know, kids will kind of shrink back from the word responsibility. You know, they get that enough from their parents at home. But when you talk about serving, and now we're talking about being selfless, and now we're talking about putting someone else first, and now we're, that sounds very purposeful. That almost sounds inspirational sometimes. And I'm giving of myself to try to help another move forward, you know, in the direction that we've agreed on. And so I do think whatever language matches, you know, a coach's particular context or the culture that they're trying to create, you know, being creative with your phrasing and with the words that we're choosing does matter a lot. And I think at the end of the day, JP, it's important for us to remember too, what are we really trying to accomplish here? You know, I'm not necessarily trying to build in a system of accountability for the sake of accountability. At the end of the day, I want players to be able to help each other to reach our standards. So if we're not practicing with the effort that we've described and said that we want, yeah, I can come in and I can try to address that. But I would prefer that players have the ability or have the courage or have the willingness to be able to support each other, serve each other, move each other forward toward that standard without me necessarily having to intervene. And whether we use the word, again, support or service, or that's encouragement, or that's, you know, one-on-one, or that's the captain's job, at the end of the day, we're really talking about behavior change. And my job, I feel, is to do whatever is necessary to empower our players to be able to do that for each other, whether we use the word accountability or something else, whether we role play that or do scenarios or talk about it together, we ultimately are all trying to reach the standard that we've set. We want to have a culture that's built on gratitude, effort, and love, because we know when we get there, the experience is worth it. And whatever that requires of me to help empower our players, I've got to be willing to try to find that for us and for our benefit together.
Yeah, and again, part of why I love having these conversations with both of you is because it sparks so many questions for me personally. And thinking about, Nate, what you just said, you know, maybe a starting point is asking our team, what's your association with the word accountability? And if we didn't say accountability, what word feels supportive in the way that we intend for this to be, in a way that feels noble? And I want to take the two words that you both use, because I think this is a great point to really close out with an invitation to the listeners. You know, Nate, you mentioned service, and JP, you mentioned responsibility too. And I think in service of our athletes, we have a responsibility to no longer let accountability be this really challenging thing, rather to take the opportunity to start to examine our own relationship with accountability, what it does and doesn't look like, where it's showing up or absent within our program. And then can we start to apply some of the tools or techniques that were talked about today, or find other ones in service of helping young people do this thing that we know is really important and also can be very challenging for young people.
So as we're wrapping up our conversation today, I just want to reiterate how important it is to develop these skills in our athletes today. As transformational coaches, we are trying to prepare our athletes for the real world, for their next stages in life. And if we want them to be effective leaders, if we want them to be great teammates, whether they work in education, healthcare, politics, or business, the courage and the skills to call others up, it's absolutely vital to the culture of any organization, any team. So do not give up on working with your athletes on this. This is a huge skill for us to be developing. That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening in. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and check out our newsletter at tocculture.com to get those notes to our latest episode.